Yes, it's that time of the week again where we unpack the week's biggest tech stories. A very big hello to you and welcome. This nice long weekend here in South Africa. Are you taking it off? Any time off for you, Kane?
No.
No, why not?
No, because we work on UK public
holidays. Oh, there's no Youth Day in the UK.
No, they're all old. No, I'm joking.
No Youth Day.
Unfortunately, no public holiday for me. But hey, I get a couple when you guys.
Yeah. You've got like what Queen Day.
King Day. To be honest, I don't know all the days, eh? I mean, it's just bank. They call it bank holidays.
Bank, yes, that's it. I've heard of that.
So any bank holiday, but South Africa has more bank holidays than the European area.
Yeah, that's you get sure. A lot of time off, eh?
Yeah, there's a few more days. On the odd occasion, you might even have a long weekend extra or two, you know, because it might fall on a Friday, Monday. But it's not too bad, eh? Get the work done. It's nice, actually. You know what? I'd prefer to have a public holiday, and it might sound selfish, I'd prefer to have a public holiday on a day where everyone else is working, because then I can go about normal business, right? You can go do your shopping, you can go to shops, you don't have to worry about them closing. So I'd rather have my public holidays on days that aren't public holidays.
Just cause, makes sense.
Because also the idea, like, you know, in Europe and stuff, I've heard my friends and my colleagues who I work with, they'll at 11:30 p.m. they're saying, I'm just heading out to the grocery store to go do some shopping, and it truly is like that. They can go to any store 24/7, obviously with the exceptions, but it makes more sense to me because the working population is working the same times that the shops are open for. So
exactly,
you know, someone makes who finishes sense. At 6 p.m. isn't just going to quickly go to the cell phone store.
You're right.
I would love for those 24-hour stores, but I think NASA would be too small to do that.
Yeah.
You need a very big city with lots of foot traffic.
Yeah.
One can dream.
One can dream. Yeah, but you know what? What kind of feels like a dream to me at the moment is how the whole load shedding situation improved just overnight.
Like a light switch.
And I'm very suspicious. Something's not lacquer, hey? You can't go, you know, just last week or the week before, we had articles saying, oh, this is going to be the coldest and darkest winter ever, and the grid is on the verge of collapsing. Remember those ghost stories we had a week or two ago?
Yes.
Freaking headlines all over the show. And, you know, we're scared and we're worried, so we go out and we buy lots of backup solutions. Now, they're all quiet because all of a sudden something happened overnight. Now, I was wondering, I was reading the articles, what could have happened? Well, one thing I know for sure is Mozambique gave us some power, 100 megawatts.
That's nothing.
But that's about it, and some units returned. But it's still not enough to go from stage 6, almost 8, to 3, where we are now.
It is very weird. It is very strange. And I've read a few articles that talk about how the peak in demand are at certain stages when the generating capacity is relatively high, and there's all sorts of reasons for it. But it is still pretty alarming that we went from such a high stage. And it's not like we incrementally went stage 1 for 2 months, and then 2, and then 3, and then 4, and then 5, and then 6. It drastically went to 6, and then almost seemingly in the same fashion went drastically to nothing. So it's odd. It doesn't make sense in my mind how it's so drastic either. It was never such a big issue to begin with, and the load shedding was a bit over exaggerated and over implemented, or they've made a really phenomenally quick fix to a very large problem that experts say will take very long to remedy, and they've managed to shortcut it. But you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of when we had heavy load shedding, like stage 5, 6, and all of a sudden, you know, Eskom's talking about how they have no money for diesel and this and that. Then the money for diesel came in, and whoop,
load shedding gone. That, yeah.
And obviously the diesel generators were firing actively at that time. And I'm always like, since that realization, I've always been a little bit skeptical when the load shedding disappears, because I'm like, are we just burning a lot of diesel to keep the wheels turning, keep people happy? Because it's kind of like bandaging a wound that needs stitches. You know, it sort of looks better, but it might not be the right, you know, the right action.
But I mean, it's midwinter, which makes it even more suspicious, because more and more people switching on the heaters, demand is going up. So no doubt. During this really hectic, high demand period, midwinter, and with all these cold fronts we're going through right now in the Western Cape, how on earth are you keeping the lights on now all of a sudden?
I think their strategy might have to do with returning certain generating units to service that might have had to be under planned maintenance, because they were very strict about the implementation of maintenance. Maybe they reduced that grip, or they increased the slack on that particular area so that there are generators operating that should be in planned maintenance mode right now. There's also the nuclear power station, which is still offline.
Coburg, yeah.
And somehow we have enough power, and that's a massive jet. So it is a true mystery that I'm...
Are you also sure. thinking that something's fishy?
I think it's just odd. Whole load shedding scenario, the back and forth, the high load shedding stage, and then the low, and then the random suspensions of load shedding. And the other day we were supposed to have a load shedding from 10 to 12, and it just didn't even come.
Yeah.
So it's like...
whenever that happens,
is it so relaxed that we can sort of just skip stages?
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking that the same.
You know?
Yeah, I was thinking the same, because it was like 10 o'clock. I was waiting for it to go off and it didn't.
But that's classic South Africans for you. Like, load shedding sucks, load shedding sucks, load shedding sucks. Okay, no more load shedding. Very suspicious. Something is clear. You know, that's our mindset.
But I am very suspicious. But also, you know, the media, the newspapers especially, they thrive on these kind of stories, you know, saying like darkest winter ever and all that kind of negativity. Because that's what, you know, gives them the readership that they need. And it brings the clicks to the websites.
Absolutely.
You know? Not the good news. People want to read about this stuff.
So do you want to hear some of our latest tech updates?
Please.
So Vodafone and 3.co.uk are partnering. And remember Vodafone, the most clearest I remember Vodafone is those dongles. Remember those 3G dongles that you used to have that you plugged in with USB to your computer?
Yes, I remember was Vodafone. So well. Vodafone.
But Vodafone is like the Vodacom of Europe, you know,
yes.
And of I always thought overseas they were the same. Territories. Mm. So there's a big partnership happening there, and UK regulators are currently overlooking it. It's not going to affect us too much, but it's, you know, when two big businesses merge, one should kind of watch carefully, because there's a lot of resources in both of those businesses. To do a merger is... you know, of two very much leading businesses is going to be really, really interesting to watch happen. And then something to kind of get under the skin of DStv, right? So the first thing is Netflix is planning its first ever live stream sport event,
mm-hmm.
which is what we've said for many a weeks of the tech show. It's like, we believe the only thing really keeping DStv's hinges connected to the wall are your sports, and Netflix taking a stab at it it should be very concerning to DStv. I think DStv's biggest advantage maybe is that the sports Netflix might start focusing on might not be the sports that are the most popular in South Africa. You have basketball, you have American football, you have, I mean, there's quite a few different sports in America that you just don't, that aren't actively sought out here in South Africa. But the minute they start touching on cricket and rugby and hockey and...
Yeah, then you're especially gonna, the rugby.
The rugby is the biggest, that is the pinnacle. But I mean,
this is a massive blow to DStv, because, you know, just last week or earlier this week, MultiChoice released their annual results.
I saw that.
And they say that their subscribers declined from 8.16 million to 8.016 million. So that's a reduction of roughly 144,000 people, or 1.8% of people cancelling DStv.
That's alarming, eh? I think they went from last year, they had a 2.8 billion rand profit, and now they have a 2.9 billion rand loss. So that is a massive jump from the previous report. I mean, to go from 2 billion profit to 2 billion loss in two reports is a massive concern. And they're kind of pointing fingers. They're saying it's load shedding. You know, it's causing active subscriber drop-off. They said they've noticed a correlation between heavy intensive load shedding months and cancellations, right? What's the point of paying $1,000?
People feel they pay and they never get to watch it, so they'd rather freeze it.
And what's the alternative? I pay every month for DSTV, but in order for me to consume DSTV, I need to drop R20,000 on an inverter setup.
Yeah.
So obviously the DSTV is going to be the one that's removed. And you can all do the same stuff with your Netflix as well. And you have Netflix on your phone, and it's very hard battle for them.
It's not just DSTV, Kane. It's not just DSTV. Telkom also suffered a R10 billion loss over the past year.
Wow.
They say it's restructuring costs, impairments, as well as load shedding. Its total market value is now less than R16 billion on the JSE. And they say their legacy and fixed line business remain under pressure. It makes sense. Everybody's cancelling ADSL because they're getting fiber.
Yeah. And it's their own fault for not maintaining that infrastructure, because that was just laid down. And those, I mean, I don't know how many people have had an ADSL connection in the last 5 years. But
no.
Towards the end stages, and anyone with ADSL now will tell you, those lines are so short. They are, like, volatile.
I thought they'd be good because everybody's off them now.
No, they're on and off.
But they're tired.
It's copper, you know.
Yeah,
it's,
and then they steal the copper as well.
Yeah.
What's left of it?
There's nothing worse than you'd have no internet because someone stole your cable out of the ground. But that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. But, I mean, you just mentioned Netflix, and I don't know if you heard about Disney Plus this week. They had quite a big announcement.
What happened?
Disney Plus... they made a very big announcement from next month, effective the 19th of July. New and existing customers on the monthly plan will be charged R139 instead of R119. So that's a quick, steep 16.8% hike. Soma Netsua. And then the annual plan has been increased from R1,190 for a year to R1,390, which makes it 14.4% more expensive. Now, for me, I have Disney Plus, and I don't feel that the content really justifies an increase like this.
I think the increase is coming from the depreciation of the rand value.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, if you are Disney Plus and you are looking at revenue from every country, in the last 2 months, you would have seen South Africa.
Yeah, you're right. You're
severely
right.
Reduce how much money is coming in from this particular country, because we pay the same rand value. The dollar's appreciated. Just the other day, it was R17 a dollar, and when I checked last, which was a week or two ago, it was 19.74.
Very close to R20.
You know, that's almost, you know, that's peaking on 3-5%. You know,
yeah.
It could go even higher than that.
Yeah,
so with that in mind, they probably saw a huge reduction in the total profit that came out of South Africa. So it doesn't surprise me that it's there, but I am fully in agreement with you. I think all the streaming platforms' content sucks, apart from a select few. There seems like there's quantitative content, but very, very select few options are actually quality. Like, I've thoroughly... invested into the show movie,
and where you feel, hey, I'm this is what I'm paying for,
and this is what I'm excited to watch, you know. And this I don't have the feeling often inside of Netflix, apart from the odd movie. Literally, it's like such a yin and yang elastic band experience for me, because a month or two or three will go by and I'll be like, I just really don't feel like I'm getting the value out of this subscription. You know, I feel like I'm watching repeats more than I'm actually watching anything new. And then here comes along a great movie, and I say, okay, there it is. Post-pandemic recovery. And then 3 months go by again, and I'm back in the same situation. Like, the content is just lacking. So I feel like they have a good steady flow of at least decent shows to stop you from withdrawing from the subscription completely, but it does feel like they don't have enough content for how much money they're making. That's for sure.
Yeah, you're right.
I feel like big movies have slowed down. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, what happened to, like, the new Transformers movie is coming out,
and Avatar's now been delayed.
The Avatar, yeah.
Avatar 3, 4, and 5.
Oh, yes. The sequels to the sequel that just released now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Postponed.
Postponed as well. So
should I postpone my subscription renewal?
So, listen, it really looks like when the next Avatar movie is coming out, I don't think we'll still be alive. it's ridiculous. Look, I know it's like hectic animation that they are using there for Avatar. But this is just hectic. Yeah, I've actually got the dates here. Avatar 3 will now be released on the 19th of December 2025 instead of its December 2024 release. Wow. And then Avatar 4 has been delayed until December 21st, 2029. And then Avatar 5 is expected 8.5 years from now, on the 19th of December 2031, and that's 22 years after the first Avatar movie was released in 2009.
No ways.
Will we still be here in 2030? Listen, this is hectic. It just shows you how quickly time goes.
Will we still have a Disney Plus subscription by that time? Will we even be watching TV traditionally by that time?
I don't think so.
I know one thing we'll definitely be in time for is the music break.
Yes. Yes, Kane, let's do that, and then we come back with more Tech Plus.
When you hold me, there's a place I go. It's a different high, oh no. When you touch me, I get vulnerable. In a different light, oh no.
If you just joined us, hello and welcome to Tech Plus, our weekly wrap of the biggest tech stories in not only South Africa but also the world. Kane's got more for you. Kane, what's next?
So when I'm going to say two words and you tell me which one you are more inclined to use, Chrome or Edge?
Chrome,
eh?
Yeah. So I'm a Chrome guy.
So for anyone who doesn't know, we're talking about Google Chrome, the internet browser.
The very hungry RAM browser.
Loves to eat RAM. And then we're also talking about Microsoft Edge, which is, if anyone doesn't know, Microsoft made Windows. So if you have a Windows PC, you've got a pre-installed operating browser, internet browser, which is called Microsoft Edge. And Microsoft specifically has been pushing quite hard over the last 6 months to 1 year to really ascertain some market share from Google Chrome and Mozilla Firefox. Now, Chrome is built on a technology called Chromium. Okay. Edge is also built on a technology, and it's also called Chromium. So in a way, Microsoft Edge uses the same technology as Google Chrome. So Microsoft really has, and we've worked with projects that are building their own browsers. So, you know, your next Google Chrome, for example, we've worked with projects like that. And oftentimes where they start is with Chromium, by building on top of the existing infrastructure that Google Chrome has developed that's part of their browser. Even Mozilla Firefox works off of Chromium. Brave browser also works off of Chromium. And then there are some other browsers that don't work off that technology. So as Microsoft, being someone who wants to get people to use their browser, they've come out with all sorts of tools. You've heard of Bing's AI, which is the AI virtual assistant that can help you with your browsing, and they push that quite heavily. They also do other kind of black hat tricks to try and make sure that you use Edge over Chrome as much as possible. And the first thing that they do is when you pre-install Windows, or when your new fresh computer arrives and it's got Windows pre-installed on it, when you open up Microsoft Edge and you go to Google to download Google Chrome, they'll tell you, they'll be like, Edge does exactly the same stuff as Google Chrome, so maybe rethink downloading it. Now, that's pretty sneaky, because if you go to download Edge off of Google Chrome, it's not going to... So they're trying everything. And one of the things that they try to do was this thing called super resolution. So you can go onto Google Images via Microsoft Edge, and when you see an image there, you can super enhance it with AI to see it better. It's like Google image search, but every image could be high quality because you can just up the quality of the image. So maybe, you know, if you ever browse Google images and you want just a good image and you have the image, but it's terrible quality, that might solve your problem.
Okay.
However, when you use that feature, it has to send your Google image to Microsoft for them to upscale it and send it back to you. So what ends up happening is every image that you look at for super resolution on Microsoft Edge is shared with Microsoft. And the problem is they enable that feature by default, which means if you use Microsoft Edge right now, every single image you look at on Microsoft Edge is sent to Microsoft to be looked at. So something worth considering, right? Do you want Microsoft to be able to see every single image that you look at on Google? For some, it won't really matter. But it is a privacy thing, and it's happening with or without your permission.
Mm.
And that's recently come up in the news. So that's just another thing that they have to now deal with to try and build a good browser. I've used their browser. It's actually much better than... Remember Internet Explorer?
Yeah. That was terrible.
It is not.
It had all those bars, eh?
Yeah.
You had so many bars and toolbars and stuff coming up, you could barely see the web page. The whole thing consisted of options and bars, like up to half of your screen. And then this small white corner here, you had to see the website. Remember that? And then it was so slow as well and just unsafe. It was just a clunky thing, eh?
No, that's crazy, eh? No, that's absolutely crazy. More crazy stuff, right? There's never an end of it. So Iran's military has released a device that is believed to be quantum capable. And the interesting thing is they released a device that looks exactly like another American brand's motherboard. It looks almost identical, but the Iranian military claim that this particular device can be used for quantum operations, which would be mainly used in sea for ships to detect other ships, and basically quantum processing on the foundations of old tech. So it's quite a claim, definitely quite a claim. Not every day you hear about a device that you can buy that can perform quantum processing operations for 10,000 rand. That's crazy. So that's happened, and people are quite surprised by that, and it's definitely worth fact checking to see if it is possible, because that's a major breakthrough in technological ability, because a quantum computer can do things a normal computer could never dream of. For example, a quantum computer could crack your password like it was a fresh bottle of Coke. It would be no problem at all. You know, it just would absolutely decimate that password encryption, and a normal computer would not. So an interesting fact for you is passwords in the future, when we're dealing with lots of quantum computing, are going to be immensely large. They have to be. So there's going to be technology that has to come into place to allow people to have a very simple password. But inherently, from a technological point of view, it has to be so sophisticated that even a quantum computer cannot crack it. And I always just find it interesting to sit with a friend and say, you know, how fascinating it is in our own ability as a civilization to remember numbers. I can remember all the numbers that my parents had as their cell phone numbers. But go back to 1864 and ask a person if they can remember a 10-digit numerical number. Probably not. It would be very difficult. But here, people learn numbers super, super quick. Your number plate, your cell phone number, your ID number. You learn these numbers quick. And then you start looking at crypto, and you've got triple, quadruple size wallets. Passphrases or wallet keys, and those are 24 letters and numbers, and eventually I believe that we will be able to remember those as easy as remember cell phone numbers. So, you know, it's always nice to imagine 100 years, 200, 300 years from now, will we just be capable of remembering a 500 word passphrase like it's nothing? You know, 500 years from now is five generations.
Yeah,
that we spoke about last week, where there was a kid who's 14 years old who produced a Lego animation that is better than seasoned professionals at 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a conversation with my gran last night, and she told me that, you know, she can have trouble with her phone, and she's got a niece that's 3.5 years old, and they are fully capable of doing exactly what she wants them to do on a phone.
Born with it in their hand.
If you ask
a millennial anything to do with phones, it's almost like they were born with it, you know?
100%.
Like that knowledge, they were like born with it.
So it's going to be an amazing, you know, that for me is fascinating, and I think it makes me excited. You know, why is it exciting to remember 500 words passphrase? It's probably not very exciting to the average human being. But if you think about it, if you have an ability to remember your 24 letters and numbers that make up your cryptocurrency digital wallet, if you can remember them like you remember your birthday, it's not written anywhere. You are the only person on earth who can access that money. There is no person bigger than you, more powerful than you, that can just access that money. So, yeah, it might sound boring to be able to remember a 24-letter number random passphrase, but the application of being able to do that gives you control. So I welcome it. Like, let's get good at remembering numbers, you know?
That's never been a strong point, so don't count on me to help you there. But listen, it's really amazing times that we're living in. I mean, I've never seen it before, but they're currently finally putting in fiber in my complex, as you know, where I stay. And then today they showed me what it looks like. And I said, no, man, you're joking. It can't be that thin little thing that you're holding there. I can barely see it. Like, I need a magnifying glass to see it. And that was the fiber.
It is incredible.
And he says, you know, when you work with it, you can't shake or anything because it's so delicate, you know, the way they put the glass around
it. It's a fiber. It's a hair-like structure that is glass.
It is crazy. It's like, how on earth do you get those speeds through that thin thing?
Can I tell you?
Tell me.
It's super interesting.
Tell me.
So fiber is glass.
Yes.
It's glass strands. So imagine,
that's right, yeah.
Imagine your hair inside of a rubber conduit, and that's all glass fiber cables, okay? Glass threads that run over continents. Threads of glass, okay? If you shine a light at a window, you will see that light even if you're across the town. You know, you can go into the heads of Nars and you can shine a torch during load shedding out your window.
Mm.
And in real time, as that torch lifts past that viewpoint in the window, you will see it with no space in between. But if you shoot a gun from that same window, it will take a minute, a few moments for that sound to get to you. So that's a good example of the difference between how fast sound can move and how fast light can move. And when you're transferring data via ADSL, it's going fast, but it's an electrical signal. This is a light-based signal. So light, and this is a very dumbed down, simplified explanation, so there's going to be a few holes in it, but it's the speed of light. With fiber, you transfer information at the speed of light. It takes light 150 milliseconds to reach Europe. So it will take you 150 milliseconds to send data from here to Europe. 150 milliseconds. You're sending data at the speed of light. In fact, the data you are sending is light. It's so interesting.
Okay, but just to clarify, the cables aren't actually shining like light.
They're sending light down, pulses of light down the cable.
But can you see it?
You can't. It's not like you're going to close your eyes and
it's not visible with the naked eye. Yeah,
but it's fast as well. It's thousands of particles.
That's crazy.
Of light.
Hey, no, I still can't believe it.
It's crazy.
It's unreal. It's just.
It's insane.
No, it's insane.
You download information to your computer via light.
Yeah, and you know how fast it is.
I mean, even the most advanced of computer chips are silicon based. You are storing information about your computer, your movie that you watch, or your software that you watch. It's stored by flashing light at a piece of glass.
Who,
in a way, it's very
simplified. Who invented it?
A genius.
I was saying to somebody as well, how, you know, who was sitting there with a piece of glass and, you know, thinking that, hey, let's, you know, try this.
The technology we're going to see coming to the market in the next few years is going to be insane, because it's like the doubling logic. You know, if you have a room that can hold 1 million people and you put one person in the room and every day you double the amount of people in the room will go from 50% capacity to 100% capacity in one day. That will be the last double. So it'll go 1 and then 2 and then 4 and then 6 and eventually it'll reach 500,000 and then it'll go from 500,000 to 1 million. And that's kind of how tech is evolving at the moment. It's kind of compound, it's exponential. And on that note, Samsung is in fact releasing something very cool. So Samsung's irregular heart rhythm monitoring is coming to more countries. So Galaxy watches are capable of taking EKGs. But those are just spot checks. This feature is more passive and works in the background to detect signs you may have atrial fibrillation. Samsung already got FDA clearance for this feature last month, but has now got Korea's Ministry of Food and Drug Safety to sign off too. Plus, it'll be introduced in 11 countries, including South America, Europe, and the Middle East. And I think it's very cool because a phone that can connect to a watch that can tell you if you have an irregular heartbeat could save someone's life. And to build it natively into your product as a phone manufacturing company building health monitoring systems, I am so happy about. It is incredible because that's the technology you actually want. Do you want to be able to play games on your phone, you know, render graphics really, really well and play your favorite car racing game? Or do you want to be able to monitor your blood pressure? Do you want to be able to monitor your heart rate? Do you want to be able to monitor how quick your body's aging? These are the kind of technologies that we've built but haven't connected to the devices, because our priority with our devices is entertainment and profession. But when you bring these health related things in, it could be massively beneficial, you know, to have extremely sensitive sensory equipment inside of your phone that can prevent you from having a stroke, you know, can help you gear, like for epileptic people where your phone can absolutely destroy you, to be able to detect in your eyes that something is going wrong with the picture that is being shown to you could save someone from a car accident in a car.
Mm-hmm.
It has so much application, and that's nice to see Samsung piloting the way. But when we come back from the music break, I got to tell you about the Apple Vision Pro, Apple's VR headset.
Can't wait. Let's play the music so we can get to it. The sooner we play the music, the sooner we get to it.
Picture a place where it all doesn't hurt, where everything's safe and it doesn't get. scared to fight for what we want tonight. Close your eyes and leave it all behind. Though our love is on our side, it's a trust fall, baby. It's a trust fall, baby. You and I and everyone alive, we can run to the fire.
Hello and welcome back to Tech Plus. Kane, please tell us more about that virtual
Apple headset. Vision Pro, Apple's VR headset. So let's take the wheel back a little bit. Meta, or Facebook, turns into Meta and decides we're going to focus on VR. This is the metaverse. The pandemic's here. People are going to be inside. We got to build on top of the metaverse. It's got to come from us. Then other people like HTC Vive and some other players came into the game and built their own headsets and released it into the market. And consumers came and they consumed these devices and they started using it. And so the VR market was born. And then there's Apple, who says, wow, this VR market is looking pretty good. We can offer things no one else can offer. Apple being a closed loop system means your phone can communicate with your watch, can communicate with your laptop, can communicate with your MacBook. It's all one system. So they decide we're going to build VR headsets. That is what we're going to do. And we're not going to build some Quest 2s or any kind of thing under $1,000. No, we're going to go ahead and we're going to build a $3,500 headset. And we're going to release it to market. So if you're someone who's considering getting a headset and you are even considering the Apple's new VR headset, you're going to be in for $3,500 or just under 70,000 Rand for a VR pair of headphones. And one must ask, well, what is the difference? Why can I pick up a pair of Facebook's or Meta's Quest 2 VR headsets for 8,000 Rand, 12,000 Rand? But if I want to go Apple, I need to pay 70,000 Rand. I mean, that's a massive price disparity. Well, the difference is when you're using the Meta Quest, it's like a cell phone. there's a computer chip in there that can perform pretty impressive operations and help you use the VR headset without having to be connected to the computer, meaning it can be load shedding. You can pop the VR headset on, you can watch a movie, you can pretend you're in a cinema and watch some YouTube videos. You can do a whole bunch of different things in VR. You can play some games, you can do some fitness, you know, you can have video calls, you can do all sorts of stuff. But, you know, that's just it's limited because of how powerful that little processor inside that VR headset is. So when you talk about playing big, massive games that are like AAA titles that are supposed to be the next big game in VR, you've got to connect your VR headset to the computer. You have to establish a connection with something with some rendering power, with some performance. But what Apple did is they said, well, let's take the components of a MacBook and put it inside the VR headset. So you've got your MacBook's, one of the Mac's best chips, which is the M1 chip, which goes in all the super expensive MacBooks, which is in the headset. So it's already got a desktop or a proper workstation grade processor inside of it. So it's not an accessory to a computer with some standalone features. It is the standalone feature that is completely an alternative to the computer. So it is in fact a computer, and it can do things you can do on a computer. It also has no remote controls. So your VR headset for MetaQuest, you had things that you held in your hands, and it was very well built. You interacted with objects in your virtual reality with these controllers. Apple doesn't have any controllers. It only has hands. And it has some of the most sophisticated eye tracking I've ever seen, which is that wherever you look on the headset knows exactly where you're looking, whether you're looking at something 1 pixel big or whether you're looking at some large macro area of your 360-degree screen. It can pinpoint exactly where your eye is. In fact, it has like over 13 different sensors across the entire VR headset, from depth cameras to infrared cameras to video cameras to like every type of sensory piece of technology you can cram into something that looks as big as snorkeling goggles, right? So it's small.
Yeah.
And it's also got two-way pass-through. So there's a camera inside the headset, and there's an LCD display on the outside of the headset where people watching you in VR will see that screen. You on the inside of the headset. That screen is on the outside, and it can actually take your eyes and put it on the outside. So if you see someone with an Apple headset on, you can actually see their eyes through the headset, and they can see you. So it's like, it can almost be a permanent fixture to your day.
Oh my word.
And everything is controlled with your hands with the most accuracy. I can't tell you how accurate it is. It's alarming because there are so many camera sensors across the entire headset. It knows where your hands are at all times. And you control the headset with your hands. To select something is kind of like touching your thumb and index finger together. The minute you tap your thumb and index finger together, you're performing a selection. And you control the navigation inside of your headset by tapping your finger together and looking somewhere. So you look at a button and you tap your finger together, and it will select that particular button.
Wow.
And then when you want to type, it's just in the air. You have a keyboard that pops out in front of you. In the air, in virtual reality space, you can see everything outside. Just normally, it just pops up in 3D space, and you go to town and you type. And that is the Apple's take on a VR headset.
Wow.
And it might be way too expensive for some people. It might not have enough features in it to say, I'm going to spend 7 times more money to get this headset. But what it is going to do is, because it's in Apple's ecosystem, you can put your Apple headset on, you can open in, and now you're in the headset and you got your pass-through, so you can see through the headset even though it's on, and you can go to your MacBook and you can look at the screen and you can tap your fingers together, and now that MacBook screen is on your screen on the VR headset. You can go outside your house and go about your day, and you've just taken your MacBook Pro laptop and put it inside of your VR headset to take with you for the day.
Without physically taking it out of the house. Without touching the laptop.
Wow. Without actually laying. And that is going to be adoption. People are going to adopt that. Now, it's a Gen 1 product for Apple. What does that mean? It means it's the first product of that nature. So who's paying for it? The early birds. The early investors are paying for it. They are going to be getting the technology that's not the most optimized. They're going to be feeling the most growing pains. But that adoption, I think, is going to be a big contributor to overall adoption of VR technology across the world. Apple's making a very good point by coming with the ultimate performance technology, the top tier of it, so that people can actually see, well, what does 10 years in the future look like for the affordable product for the consumer? Well, in 10 years from now, it might only cost you 8,000 Rand to have an Apple Pro type VR headset. And then the possibilities become endless. And that's the update on VR. I mean, we thought it's dead. We thought AI's taken over.
Yeah.
Not for Apple. They're a little bit behind.
It's only over for Mark.
And they asked Mark, what do you think of this headset? And he gave a total marketing answer. He was like, it's nothing we haven't considered before. We like the product, but we don't want this product to be the future of VR. We want our own product to be the future of VR.
Well, then
we're building it to be.
Make it
happen.
See if you can make it better than what's out now.
So we're waiting for the Quest 3 to come out now.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a cheaper alternative. It's not going to be as big, but Meta's got a little bit of a head start in the market. Mm. And you best keep an eye on them as well. And then, next news, in a random turn of events, Donald Trump has been arrested.
I saw. And he was in court.
He's been caught and he pleaded not guilty to 37 federal charges, including things like willful retention of national defense information, one count of conspiracy to obstruct justice, one count of withholding a document or record, one count of corruptly concealing a document or record, one count of concealing a document in a federal investigation, one count of a scheme to conceal. It feels like he hid one document and they gave him every punishable crime for that.
Yeah. He of course, I saw in the news, he said, you know, he's not guilty. But isn't he like the first president in US history to have a case like this against him?
Because he had some document at his home address or something.
This must be an amazing document.
It must hold like the shiny secrets to the earth, you know.
Gee.
It's the type of stuff you'll see in a movie with Nicolas Cage hunting for treasure, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, knowing Trump, I'm sure all he said was fake news, guys, fake news.
Just fake news. But speaking of America, Texas has now passed, I think, one of the best and worst laws that could have happened right now, which is to ban kids from social media or the internet without parental consent. That's a big one because it has pros and cons. The pros are obvious because there's a lot of negative stuff. There's a lot of disorders that are vocalized. There's a lot of bad habits that can be formed from having access to this technology. So there are a fair number of pros from restricting access to anyone under the age of 18. But there are also very much so cons. For example, increasing parental controls is all well and good until the parent is being abusive with that power, right? Maybe you want to call for help, you can't do it. You have no access to social media, you can't get word out, you can't communicate with friends. Maybe your ability to communicate with friends and ask for help is removed when you're not behaving, and it can spiral out of control.
I didn't even think of that, yeah.
But more importantly for me, there has to be a balance between those two things, I agree. You know, you need to stop the kids from reaching the stuff that's bad for them, and then you also need to be able to access the stuff that's good for them and not have a one or the other scenario. There has to be a balance there. But I think most importantly, if you can give a phone to a two-year-old, and by the time he's seven is more proficient than most of your family at using a phone, if you only give him that phone at 18, you're massively undercutting him.
Yeah.
It's a significant disadvantage because of how fast tech evolves.
You're right.
You know, you got to get that head start. And sure, parents can give consent, but what about the parent that just doesn't care about technology, that doesn't care if their kid knows how to use a computer or how to use a phone? It might not matter today, but it could be the difference between having a job and not having a job in the future. If you can't interface with technology, imagine a person without WhatsApp today.
Mm.
Like we had a gardener, he didn't have WhatsApp. How does he get a job? How does he message someone? Because no one's using SMS anymore. No one likes to answer calls. You don't have access to the internet.
I know somebody who doesn't have WhatsApp.
It's not good, bro.
But just one person.
It's very difficult for them to operate in society.
That's the only person I'm still SMSing.
You can't. But think about it. You can't access Facebook to see job listings.
Yeah.
You can't get to Gumtree to find job listings. You can't view the action ads in a digital format. You can't do anything if you don't have access to a cellular device.
A smartphone.
Something that can be your assistant in life. And that's exactly what this particular device has become. Aside from taking photos and saving memories and slight things, it's still a communication. It's access to the rest of the world. I always used to make a joke when I had my generator. I said, with one generator and an extension cable, I can access the whole world.
It's amazing. Eh? That's true.
Yeah, but with a phone, you don't need a cable and you don't need a generator. Yeah. You just need internet. You can access the whole
world. We don't think of it that way. Hey? Yeah. Like the generator thing now.
No, it's crazy.
With petrol inside this machine,
I can access the whole world. Yeah, and they can access
It's crazy.
Me. That's insane. So, yeah, banning people from the internet under the age of 18 is it has to be monitored. There's not the only American state to do that either. There are a few others that are even enforcing more stricter rules. So I think kids should be protected from the internet. But I think the internet is one of the most powerful learning mechanisms that you have access to. It's the global library for free. You don't need a library card. You don't need anything. It's just a library of everything and anything you could ever want, accessible through a phone that doesn't need to be connected to a wall plug, right? It can speak in any language. It can relay any kind of video content. It can have apps that can perform very, very complicated mathematical computations. The internet, the phone, the apps are so important for the future. Unless, of course, a meteor hits and the internet goes down and we no longer use power, that is so important that your kids get a head start on that. I'm speaking right now. You know, I'm 26 years old. Most of the people that I know that are over the age of 45 do not even know how powerful the phone is that they use. They might have 10 problems that they can't solve. Maybe they can't change a certain setting on the TV. Maybe their microwave for some reason can't defrost. Maybe the fridge no longer works anymore. There could be a plethora of issues that are just tormenting you throughout your day. And the thing you use to make phone calls and you send text messages and watch funny videos is also the thing that's going to give you every single answer to every single problem.
But they don't know it.
But you don't know it's right there.
That's it.
It's right there in front of you.
Yeah.
That Google search for best hairdresser in Knysna can also be the Google search that says, how do I fix a microwave that won't go to defrost for this particular model number?
Yeah, and you usually get the answer. Well, there's some kind of thread where people discuss it.
There's a guy on YouTube who's like, I wanted to do this and I solved it. I'll give you another example. I bought a USB flash drive from the internet. It was quite an expensive thing. Came, didn't work. So I was like, search it up online, found a video, and it was just a manufacturing area to take the casing off, change a little wire, put it back, work like a charm.
Oh.
You know? It's right there.
Yeah. But they don't know. So a lot of people, especially the older people, they think, you know, it's fine. It can do what I need it to do. It can make phone calls and receive phone calls, and that's basically it. They don't really care about all the added features. So they don't realize what you say there.
No, your kids are going to be the ones to have a head start. Why? Because when someone who's not familiar with the phone uses a phone, they use it and they stay in the frame of mind that I just don't want to break it. You know, I want to change something. I want to do something. I want to achieve something. As long as I don't break anything.
Yeah, why do they always worry about breaking?
Because it's
it?
So easy to break. You can get lost in an app. You can suddenly change your theme color. Your lock password changes.
But it's not broken.
Suddenly your wallpaper's a up close selfie and you don't know how to get rid of it. A lot can go wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
But a kid who wants to get to YouTube could spend 5 days trying to find the YouTube app.
Mm.
And he eventually will find it and he will know how to get to YouTube. But what happened along the way? Is he stumbled and he fell and he found things and he found apps and he found utilities and he found little things that he can do along the way that he won't use right away, but he's so much more familiar after those 5 days literally walking through the jungle of technology.
Yeah.
And he becomes experienced.
Yeah.
And that willingness to go about achieving what you want to achieve regardless of how much damage you inflict on the device, because you don't care if you're five, you don't care if you mess up some software setting
no.
or your WhatsApp disappears. They couldn't care less. And because of that not caring less, they are so willing to explore and navigate. You can't not give someone a piece of technology at that critical phase of can't just make someone completely unafraid to fail.
Yeah.
But if you give a kid a piece of technology, they're not afraid of failing. They just believe they can use it. There's just some way, and they're looking at their parents and how they use the phone, and they're learning as they see it happen in front of them. It's like a sponge. It's so fast.
Yeah, total sponge. But let's look at the children and follow their example, eh? I think it's incredible because I've seen a lot of older people as well. When you teach them something on the computer, they're always worried they're going to break something.
Yeah.
Or lose something. No, but it was there in that corner and it must stay there now. I know it is over there.
Mustn't even touch
it. Now I clicked here and then it shot to that other corner. Why is that, you know? So yeah. I think they're also scared of unfamiliar things.
My advice to anyone who feels unfamiliar with technology is just go in and wreck it all. Just go in and just make his... whatever you do wrong, you can fix. I assure you, you can fix. And anything that you can't fix, you will get over. But go out and just mess things up.
Okay, but don't delete the registry files, okay?
At the end of the day, going down the path of most failures is going to result in you getting a bit hurt. But get your old phone out the cupboard. You know, get your old computer that you're not using anymore and just explore it.
I'm feeling rebellious. I'm going to take the mouse and click on the C drive and throw it in the recycle bin.
And then empty it. Just to get the job done.
Oh, that's funny.
And are we off to a music break?
No, it's actually the end of the show.
Time flies.
It flies. It's insane, hey?
Tomorrow morning we'll be doing another tech show.
Yeah.
The whole week on in a flash.
Yeah, it's crazy, hey?
But what I like really enjoy, I think we had some good topics today.
We did. We got lost in it, I think.
I definitely did.
Yeah. No, fascinating stuff. Same year, Kane. Thank you so much and enjoy your... Well, can't really say long weekend. But enjoy your weekend.
I'll enjoy looking at it from the sideline.
Yeah, enjoy it.
And thank you for everyone for listening in, and we'll see you next week.
And thanks to you for joining us. Cheers, man.
Cheers.